Les conférences du Collège de France.
Good morning everyone and welcome to this third lecture of this series. So today we will again be talking about the Steinitz problem, and in particular today we will be talking about approximation algorithms and what is called the hypergraphic relaxation for this. But yeah, don't worry, I will explain what all these things are again. So today's topic is approximation algorithms and the hypergraphic relaxation for Steiner tree. And okay, so let me start by first reminding everyone of the Steinitz tree problem, and also then we are all on the same page regarding the notation that we are using for this. So what is Steinitz tree about? So we are given some graph, could be looking like this. So we have a graph G with vertices and edges, and then there are two types of vertices, the squares and the point dots, basically. And the squares are what we call the terminals, and our goal is to connect all these terminals together in the cheapest possible way. So we have a set of terminals, all denoted by R. This is a subset of V, and these are always the squares in the picture. And then we also have our edges come with costs. So this is given by some cost function, which is simply assigning to every edge some non-negative cost. And yeah, what our task is to find a minimum cost subset of the edges that connects all the terminals. So what we're interested in is finding the minimum cost subset F of the edges connecting R. So how this could look like in this example, perhaps that's a graph. Then maybe F could consist of, so this might be how our solution F looks like. That's an example of a solution. It connects all the terminals, so all the squares. It can also connect, use some of the dots, but it doesn't have to use them. And one thing that's sometimes useful to assume, and what we can always assume without loss of generality, is that G is a complete graph and that C is just a metric, so it satisfies the triangle inequality. And the way we can assume this is that we could simply always, whenever G is not complete and C does not necessarily satisfy the triangle inequality, we could always insert these artificial edges just between every pair of vertices and give it as a cost. We just assign the length of the shortest path between these two vertices. And then if we in the end happen to include this edge in our solution, we can replace it back by a shortest path. So this is without loss of generality. And this is also useful for finding some first approximation algorithm. So sort of maybe the first somehow folklore approximation algorithm, which is a true approximation. So an algorithm that always computes a solution which is off by at most a factor of 2 from the optimal solution. And what this algorithm simply does is it computes what we call a terminal MST, so a terminal minimum spanning tree. So this is, say, this is simply a minimum spanning tree in the subgraph of G induced by R, and here we are assuming that the graph is complete. So the way the picture looks like is if we have these four terminals, then we look at this induced subgraph by these four terminals. It's a complete graph. And then we are simply looking for a cheapest solution inside this graph. So this could be, for example, a terminal minimum spanning tree. So in some sense, we are not making use of our Steiner vertices, of these dots here, but we are basically just using direct connections between the terminals. And one can prove, and we've kind of implicitly shown this in the last lecture, that this will always be at most a factor two off from what is an optimal solution, and it certainly always gives us some solution. So this is sort of the starting point in the first simple approximation algorithm for this problem. But there are a lot better approximation algorithms known. So let me give you a little bit of this overview of the history. I will not list every single improvement of the approximation ratio, but I will list some that are particularly relevant and that I will also mention and go through in the course of today's lecture. So skipping, there's been quite a lot of work on this, but some particular relevant ones that we'll cover today. One is an algorithm by Zelikowski from 1996, which has an approximation factor of 1 plus natural logarithm of 2 plus epsilon. And this is, to give you some idea, this is a little bit less than 1.7. That's roughly this. That's Zelikowski's algorithm. And the currently best known approximation factor is due to Birka, Grandoni, Rotfuss, and Sanita. And this is from 2010. And they gave an approximation factor of logarithm of 4 plus epsilon, which is slightly less than 1.4. And this is the state of the art, so this is the currently best approximation factor we know. In their algorithm, we'll see the algorithm later on. They made use of what is called the hypergraphic relaxation for Steiner tree. I will introduce that later on. It's some linear programming relaxation. What is interesting is that they kind of used this linear program in their algorithm. However, their analysis didn't imply anything about the integrality gap of this linear programming relaxation, which is maybe somewhat unusual. We'll see a bit why later on. And so then later, after this result, Gumans, Oliver, Rotfuss, and St. Cloison in 2012, they proved that actually this hypergraphic LP, this hypergraphic relaxation that was used in this algorithm, actually has an integrality gap of at most logarithm of 4. So the hypergraphic LP, which I will introduce later, has an integrality gap of at most logarithm of 4. And then there was one more result, or actually not really a new result, which is some joint work together with Rikuts and Cloison from, recently. Which is that we basically gave an alternative proof for these last two results and also an alternative basically algorithm to achieve this approximation factor here via a local search approach. For the last two results, okay, so this is kind of a little bit of the history, and what the plan for today's lecture is that I will basically want to explain you kind of the main ideas behind these results. I'll start a little bit with the idea of Zelikowski, because some of the concepts will be used later on. Then I will explain you this algorithm and some analysis of it. I will not for all of this, I will not necessarily stick to exactly the original analysis, but use a little bit more the perspective and kind of terminology that we use in this last result here for the local search. So it's not quite the original proofs always, but of course heavily building on the techniques in these papers. And then at the end, I can, once we have this and we kind of saw these techniques, I can at least give you some hint of how also this local search works then with the techniques that we've seen earlier. So this is the plan for today's lecture. And yeah, again, as always, just interrupt me and ask questions if something is unclear. Okay, so yes? Yes, there are hardness results. So Steiner tree is APX hard, so we cannot hope for a polynomial time approximation scheme, arbitrary good approximation factors, but there are no very strong hardness results, so it's more very close to one, the bounds that we have. So it's not saying much more than that we cannot get a p-test. So it's still, quite widely open how good we can approximate this. Okay, so then, let me start with the key idea, key concept behind Zelikowski's algorithm, which plays an important role in almost all, or maybe even all, Steiner tree approximation algorithms that improve on this factor too. And this is the idea of component contraction. So what we do there is we think of the following. I think we start by applying this two approximation algorithm, for example. So we start with some terminal spanning tree. In general, we have some spanning tree on the terminals. So we have some tree which is connecting all our terminals in some way. Possibly, this could look like that. So some spanning tree on the terminals. And then the idea is that we will look at what we call a K component. So a K component Y. This could look, for example, for K equals 3. This could, for example, look like this. So what this is in general, it's just some Steiner tree which is connecting just a subset of our terminals. And we call it a K component if it's connecting at most K terminals. So in this case, this yellow thing, edge set, is connecting 3 terminals, so it would be a 3 component. That's the idea. So in general, this is an edge set connecting a subset of at most k terminals. Okay. And now you could think of what happens if I add this k component to my solution, to my what is currently a terminal spanning tree. Well, if I do this, then if I add this component y, I could delete some edges from my spanning tree. So for example, I could possibly delete this edge, and then maybe I could also, certainly also delete this edge. I mean, there are different choices. Like instead of deleting this edge, I could have also deleted that edge or the other one. There are several options. I will try, of course, to delete somehow the cheapest option. And this is what we will call the drop of this component Y with respect to the spanning tree. So the drop of y with respect to the spanning tree, this is a minimum cost subset of s such that if we take y and then we basically add s, but we drop or remove this drop set s of y, then this still should connect all terminals. this red set in the picture. It's just the minimum cost set of subset of edges of my terminal spanning tree that I can drop once I add my component y. That's the definition of this drop. And what Zelikowski's algorithm, I mean, the idea is now, of course, hopefully if I add my component, my yellow component y here, then hopefully this yellow component is somehow cheaper than the red edges, these drop edges that I can remove. And then I'm kind of making progress over my two approximations with which I have started at the beginning. So this is kind of the idea of this Zelikowski algorithm, that we start with this terminal minimum spanning tree, then we find some k component for some small number k in some greedy way. We add this and then we remove some edges which are hopefully more expensive than what we added. So then we are kind of making our solution cheaper over time. So what this Zelikowski's algorithm is doing, this is in some sense some greedy algorithm. Zelikowski's algorithm is, so k will always be a fixed constant, which is somehow chosen large enough, and basically how large we choose k basically just impacts what our epsilon is here. So if we choose epsilon k large enough, then we make this our loss small here. And then what we do is, in every iteration, we choose some component y to add. Then we remove the drop of y with respect to our terminal spanning tree S. And what we then do is we basically contract y. So the reason is, okay, if we contract y, then we are back in the picture where whatever is left is basically, again, a spanning tree on the terminals. So after we contracted y, we again have a spanning tree on the terminals. Now this is always, this yellow part is always fixed in our solution. And then we contracted these vertices and all the remaining white edges that we haven't dropped, they will again form a spanning tree on whatever is left. And from then we can kind of iterate. So this is the idea. So yeah, we always want to have a spanning tree on the terminals, then we add some component and drop. Yes?
Sorry, this means that this y is always connected?
Yeah, sorry? Yeah, this. Yeah, the k component will always be connected itself. It just, it always, we just have like the subset of k terminals, in this case these three ones, and they are then connected together. But in contrast to this terminal spanning tree, for connecting them, we can now also use these dots, and we are not just only using these direct connections between the terminals anymore. But then in order to kind of, in the next iteration, have the same picture again and start again with a spanning tree on the terminals, using only direct connections, we will always contract this y and then sort of iterate. And yeah, maybe not go too much into details here, but essentially I haven't exactly told you how we choose this y here, but basically this is some greedy choice of the y. So what you can do is basically if k is a fixed constant, you can enumerate all, you can basically guess which k vertices your component should connect, just try all possibilities. If k is a constant, you can do that in polynomial time. And then if I fix which k terminals I want to connect, the cheapest yellow edge set connecting them can actually be computed in polynomial time using the dynamic programming algorithm, for example, by Dreyfus and Wagner. But so basically, yeah, this restriction to a constant number of terminals here allows you to find the best component connecting given subset, and then this is just some greedy choice of the whole thing. And this is what Zelikowski does. So there's this component contraction, but the algorithm itself is fairly simple. You just choose these things greedily. Okay, so what is, maybe let me say a few words about the analysis. So there is, not go through this in detail, but let me introduce like the the key theorem that you need in order to analyze this algorithm. And this is what we call, this is not exactly stated like this, maybe in Silikovsky's work, but this is what we call the decomposition theorem, which is basically the core of the analysis. And so what this is saying is, let me write this maybe down. So we fix some positive epsilon, and we say S is any spanning tree on the terminals. So it's only using direct connections between the terminals. And then what the theorem is saying that if K is large enough, namely at least 2 to the 1 over epsilon, then there exists a collection pi of K components. Such that we have two properties. So the idea is basically what we want to do is we want to show that there is some good choice for our greedy algorithm to make. I mean, the greedy algorithm will always, in some greedy way, choose kind of the best component in a certain sense to pick next. But it's not upfront clear that there always exists a good component. And so what this decomposition theorem tells us is that there exists a collection pi of K components with certain properties. And the idea will be that from the decomposition theorem, one can conclude that one of these K components in this collection pi is a good choice for the greedy algorithm to pick. So just to give a little bit of context where we are heading. So what the theorem tells us is that if I sum up the cost of my components in this collection pi, then the total cost will be not much more than the cost of opt, so of an optimum solution. And second, if I look at the sum over all my components in my collection, and if I look at what is the cost of their drop sets, so of their drop with respect to my tree S, then this will sum up to at least the cost of the whole spanning tree. That's the theorem. So why is this useful? So in general, we want to show that there is basically a component that we can pick that is cheap, so which has small cost. And we want to show that ideally this component also has the cost of its drop set is large. Because this means if we add the component, we can remove expensive red edges. And so this is saying, like, if I sum up over all the components, then the cost will be cheap. And if I sum up over all components, the cost of the drops will be large. And then basically what you do in the analysis is you just do some averaging argument and say one of these components, like, must be good. And so this kind of allows you to prove that at least at the beginning of Silikovsky's algorithm, you will find components that actually make your solution cheaper, unless the terminal spanning tree already was a great approximation somehow. So basically, this is like the core theorem that you need to do the Silikovsky to analyze this greedy algorithm, and then the rest is somehow a calculation. You do some averaging argument from here and have to figure out the details of the exact approximation factor. And if you do the calculation, you end up with this. But this decomposition theorem is really like the core thing that you need. And so let me say a few words about what is behind this decomposition theorem and where this is coming from. Right, this is true because also there is one important concept here, which is used over and over again in the context of approximation algorithms for Steiner tree. And this is a result by Borchers and Yu, is 1997. And what they looked at is what we call K-restricted Steiner trees. So let me just draw a picture to explain what I mean by this. Okay, so if I have some Steiner tree, it could look like this, then I can think of the Steiner tree as falling apart into several components, as are shown here. And what really happens is kind of whenever I have a terminal here, I will kind of think of splitting this up. So here I have some component connecting these four terminals. Then I have this red component connecting these three terminals. And then I have this yellow component connecting these four terminals. But basically, I'm splitting this always up at the terminals. So I can think of a Steiner tree as falling apart into several full components, as you can see here in this picture. And these are called the full components of the Steiner tree. And the way you can think of what we will call a K-restricted Steiner tree is a Steiner tree which basically consists only of components, only of K components, so only of components each connecting at most K terminals. So this is the idea. And what Borges and Yu have shown is that we can essentially assume that the cheapest K-restricted Steiner tree which we'll denote by opt k. So opt is just the generally best Steiner tree over all that exists, and opt k is just the best among the k-restricted ones that look like this. And then we can basically assume that this is not much more expensive than opt. And so, yeah, not much more expensive. What this means exactly kind of depends on the k. So basically, what you can show in the end is that opt k costs not more than 1 plus epsilon factor times the cost of opt if k is somehow large enough. And in fact, the bound is basically this. So this is where this bound in decomposition theorem is coming from, if k is at least 2 to the 1 over epsilon. So this is kind of the one ingredient that you need to prove this decomposition theorem. So where this collection pi here of k components is coming from in the decomposition theorem is basically you look at this optimal k-restricted Steiner tree, opt k, and then you just take the collection of all these components of this k-restricted Steiner tree. So this collection pi would in this picture consist of the white, the red, and the yellow component. And this is where these are coming from. And then this theorem where Borges and Yu basically tells you that this collection of components satisfies this property A here, namely that the total cost of these components, which is just the cost of our K-restricted Steiner tree, is not much more expensive than opt. This is what this is saying. And then one also has to prove property B, and this is, yeah, one can use some theorem by Greener and Magnati. It's also very classical work from 1975. And what this is using is basically, this is just some statement about what is called the block exchange property of spanning trees, or this is also called, they actually proved it more generally for matroids, if you know what this means. So this is like following, so this property B can basically be shown using like classical like matroid theory. They're like, yeah, if you're familiar with matroids, you know that they have nice exchange properties. And this is something you can use to prove the statement B there. And yeah, here we are just using that, yeah, spanning trees are just the basis of some matroid. Okay, but whatever, if this doesn't mean anything to you, doesn't matter. In the end, we kind of get this decomposition theorem. And the important concept that we will use again later on is this thing here of K-restricted Steiner trees. Okay, so I think this is all I wanted to say about this Silikovsky algorithm and what's going on in the analysis there. Unless there are any questions, I would then move on to introducing the other part of what is part of the title, this hypergraphic relaxation, which we'll then use for kind of getting better approximation algorithms later on. Okay, so then to introduce what the hypergraphic relaxation is, so this is a linear programming relaxation, hypergraphic LP. So again, a fractional relaxation of the problem. To define this, we will fix some root vertex, one of the terminals, call it a root, and we will again fix some constant k as before. And so what's going on in this hypergraphic LP? Maybe let me show it a little bit in this picture. So we would fix some root vertex r. For example, maybe we would fix this vertex at the bottom here to be r. And then we think of our solution as being oriented towards this root r. So just orient all edges pointing towards the root, like this. And then if we now want to find relaxation for our K-restricted Steiner tree, and what does this hypergraphic LP will again have like some variables, some continuous variables, and the variables will now correspond to these components of our, to these K components of our K-restricted Steiner tree, and they will correspond to oriented K components. So every K component, for example, this white one here, is connecting these four terminals, and it's oriented towards this vertex here. And this red component here is kind of connecting these three vertices and is oriented towards this root here. And this yellow component is connecting these four terminals and it's oriented towards this vertex here. And this is kind of the thing to which our variables will correspond. So this is why we introduce the following annotation. This is basically should denote like the set of oriented K components. And the way we will specify this is as some pairs T, comma small t, where T is a subset of our terminals of size at most K. And then T in T is kind of the vertex to which the whole thing is oriented. So you should think of, for example, for this yellow component here, the set capital T would be like these four terminals connected by the yellow component, and the vertex small t would kind of be this one here, towards this yellow component is oriented. That's the way of thinking of this thing here. We would say, we'll then define the cost of t as the cost of the cheapest component yt connecting capital T. And then we will also introduce the notation of what is the set of outgoing components of a subset U. And for this, let me draw a picture. So we have U And U is the subset of the terminals. So could be looking like this. Maybe like that. And then I would say that an element of the CK here is outgoing. If, for example, this could be my set T, and this could be my vertex. Small t is basically my set T has at least one element inside U, but this root small t of my component is outside U. So what's basically happening is that if I look at the corresponding component that this thing is modeling, it's some directed component connecting all these terminals and T and oriented towards the small t, then this will somehow have some outgoing edge of U. It will be going out of my set U. This is the idea. So the notation formally says that it's the set of all pairs capital T, small t in CK, such that U intersected R is not empty. So U intersected T is not empty, and T is not contained in U. Okay, so this is the notion of what are the outgoing components. And with this, we can now write down what is now the hypergraphic relaxation. This is kind of parametrized by a parameter k here, hypergraphic for a certain k. What we are doing is we'll have variables for all these pairs t, t, and ck. We'll have a variable xt, t. This variable should basically indicate whether the corresponding component connecting capital T and oriented towards small t, whether this is part of our K-restricted Steiner tree. So this is, will be somehow between 0 and 1 and indicating this. Our variables X, T, T will be, of course, at least 0 for all pairs in CK. And we'll have as constraints that if we look at some subset, some non-empty subset of the terminals, which does not contain our globally chosen root R here, if I look at some subset here, I will need to have at least one outgoing component. So if I sum over all pairs, all my T, T pairs in delta plus of U, all my outgoing components of U, I sum up their x variables, then this should be at least 1. Because I need at least one outgoing component. Okay. So this is then what this hypergraphic relaxation is. Maybe, just this one remark here. So if for any constant k here, this hypergraphic relaxation can be solved in polynomial time. So this is possible. But if you allow, if we omit this restriction here of restricting these sets to something, whatever these terminal sets, t here to a constant size, if we omit this and allow arbitrary large components, then this becomes NP-hard to solve. So this is why we always restrict to this k for some constant k. Okay, good. Quite some notation. So any questions about how this hypergraphic relaxation is defined before we move on using it? Good. Okay. Then, maybe one observation, to make sure. What we, of course, have, this whole thing is a relaxation. So the value of this hypergraphic relaxation will be at most the cost of the optimum k-restricted Steiner tree, because the optimum k-restricted Steiner tree would correspond to some feasible solution here by setting just these variable x variables to 1 for the components that actually appear there and setting them to 0 otherwise. And then if k is large enough, this is at most 1 plus epsilon times the cost of opt. So this gives us an approximate lower bound on the cost of an optimum solution. And gives us an exact lower bound on the cost of an optimum k-restricted solution. Okay, so this is the relaxation. Now I can tell you what this algorithm by Birker, Grandoni, Rochfoss, and Sanita is doing. Once we have this hypergraphic relaxation, it's actually a fairly simple algorithm to state. It's a so-called iterative randomized rounding algorithm. This is due to Birker, Grandoni, Rochfoss, and Sanita from 2010. Okay, and what this algorithm does is basically the following. So we solve this hypergraphic relaxation, and now we want to pick one component to include in our solution. And the way we do this is we just choose this component randomly with probabilities proportional to these x variables here. So every component is picked with a probability proportionally to this x variable, and then we just sample one of these components, we buy it, contract it, and kind of continue on the residual instance, solve the LP again, and do the same thing over and over again until everything is contracted, so we have components that fully connect everything. So that's the algorithm. So let me write this down. So as long as we still have more than one terminal, so as long as there is still something to connect, what we do is we compute an optimum solution x to the hypergraphic LP. Then we sample a component from our set of k components with probability proportional to what we have in the LP variables, basically. And then we contract T and include the cheapest component YT connecting T in our Steiner tree solution. And then we just iterate the whole thing. So that's the algorithm. Okay, so this is this algorithm which gives an ln4 plus epsilon approximation. Once you have the hypergraphic LP, it's fairly simple to state. You just choose these components randomly to include just with the probabilities naturally coming from the LP. So from this hypergraphic relaxation. So now the remainder of the lecture, I want to tell you a little bit about how one can analyze this thing. This algorithm. So what's going on in the analysis? And so there is one important lemma that one typically uses in the analysis, which is the bridge lemma, which is also due to Birker, Grandoni, Rochfoss, and Sanita. And the way I'm thinking about this is that this is basically this bridge lemma is basically a fractional version of the decomposition theorem we've seen before. So just like intuitively, it's a fractional version of the decomposition theorem. It's in fact, really a generalization of this. So let me explain what this is stating. So if x is a feasible solution of the hypergraphic LP. And we say S is a terminal spanning tree. Then the statement is the following. If we sum up over all my k components, I'm weighting everything by their corresponding x variables. If I look at the cost of the drop sets of my components yt, then this sums up to at least the cost of my spanning tree. So this is the statement. And so what does this have to do with the decomposition theorem? So basically, if x is an integral solution here, so if x corresponds to an actual k-restricted Steiner tree, then this inequality here that we get is exactly this condition B from the decomposition theorem that we had before, that we are basically saying if I sum up over all my components that I have in my solution, which is now a fractional solution, but which was earlier an integral solution, so just a k-restricted Steiner tree, if I sum up the drops of these components, the cost of these drop sets, then this will sum up at least to the cost of my spanning tree. So in some sense, this is a generalization of this statement that we had before. So this bridge lemma is one ingredient that we'll need for the analysis. Now, of course, one thing that might be a bit strange here is, okay, I'm still talking about terminal spanning trees, but there is no terminal spanning tree around anymore in our analysis or in our algorithm, so how should we even apply this theorem? What should be the spanning tree? And this is indeed one problem always in the analysis of the Steiner tree algorithms, that we are very good at kind of, because of the matroid properties, these exchange properties of spanning trees. Spanning trees have a nice structure. We understand them very well. We are very good at analyzing how much cheaper does my spanning tree become, which edges can I delete my spanning tree if I contract some terminals, for example, or if I add some component. So here, for example, we are contracting some terminals. We could very nicely analyze how much cheaper a spanning tree on these terminals becomes, but it's very difficult to analyze how much cheaper a Steiner tree becomes. Or at least there's no direct way of doing this. We don't know any way of doing this. So we really can only do this for terminals, for spanning trees, because spanning trees have these nice matroid structure. And so what one does in the analysis, what we'll do now, and I will introduce this concept of what we call a witness tree, is that we basically, because we don't know how to analyze Steiner trees, but we know how to analyze spanning trees, we will introduce an auxiliary spanning tree, which we analyze, which will then help us to indirectly analyze what's happening in a Steiner tree. So yeah, hope this will become a bit more clear, but the idea behind this next concept of witness tree is that we introduce an auxiliary spanning tree because this is something we can analyze. Spanning trees is something we understand, whereas Steiner trees are somehow difficult. So roughly as an intuition. So what we will do is for a Steiner tree solution F, we define an auxiliary terminal spanning tree S, which we call the witness tree. And this will also get some auxiliary costs, C bar, so just some non-negative costs assigned to every edge of my auxiliary tree. So let me draw maybe a picture. So we have our if we have some Steiner tree solution F, some Steiner tree F, and then for a Steiner tree, we will define a corresponding witness tree. Tree S. For now, let's not worry about how we choose this witness tree exactly. It's just some somehow cleverly chosen tree corresponding to the Steiner tree on the left. And it will be an auxiliary tree that we just use in the analysis of the algorithm. And so, yeah. Then there is one important concept that we'll need. Connecting these two trees to each other. We'll see in a moment why this is a useful concept. And namely, we define for an edge F in our Steiner tree F, for example, this edge F here in the middle, we'll define the corresponding witness set of this edge. And this witness set will consist of edges of our auxiliary spanning tree. So formally, the definition is, write down the definition and then I will show it in an example. The witness set of my edge F consists of all edges AB in my auxiliary spanning tree S, such that F is contained in the AB path in my solution F. That's the definition. Maybe look at this example, what this means. So here we have three edges E1, E2, and E3, and we are always interested, what we are looking at these paths here is, for the yellow edge, we are looking at the path between the endpoints of E1. So this is basically this path here in the tree. For the blue edge, we are looking at this path here in the tree, and for the red edge, we are looking at this path here in the tree. And for this reason, like the witness set of this edge F here in the middle, the witness set of F will consist of the yellow edge, E1, because F is lying on the yellow path. The blue edge, E2, is not contained in here because the edge F is not lying on the blue path, but it's lying on the red path, and this is why we have the edge E3 in here. So this is what this definition is saying. Okay, so this is the definition. I hope that kind of what is clear what the definition is saying. It's maybe not so clear yet why we are defining this in this way. So let me explain you how we use this concept of the witness tree in the analysis of the algorithm. What are we doing there? So we always have a Steiner tree solution F, and what we will initially do, initially we set F to be the optimum K-restricted Steiner tree, and then we consider the corresponding witness tree S for F. A witness tree for F. And so what we want is that basically throughout our algorithm, S will always be a spanning tree on the terminals, and F will always be some K-restricted solution. So what we do is, and then in kind of we think of like throughout the algorithm, while the algorithm is contracting stuff, And choosing components, we are also updating F and S, but that's something we just do in the analysis, so which is not really happening in the algorithm. So what happens in the algorithm when we are including some component YT, connecting a set T of terminals, then we think of removing the drop of YT with respect to S, and our auxiliary cost function C bar from S. So whenever we are including a component connecting a subset of terminals, we remove the corresponding drop from our auxiliary terminal spanning tree. And remember that then T kind of gets contracted in the algorithm. So basically S will remain a spanning tree throughout. We always remove the drop whenever we contract something, and so S will remain a spanning tree. And then how do we update F? So in F, we delete edges from F if their witness set becomes empty. And the idea is that this mechanism should maintain the invariant that F remains a feasible solution. So let me explain maybe why this is the case, and then we'll also kind of see why we defined the witness sets in a way we did this. So the first thing, so what we're doing here is that, okay, by always removing the drop, we kind of make sure that S remains a spanning tree throughout the algorithm. So S will always connect all the terminals to each other. And then what we're doing with these witness sets here is basically, as long as, for example, this yellow edge here is still present in my tree, I will not be able to delete any of the edges of the yellow path here from my solution F, because for all these edges on the yellow path, F is contained in the witness set, so the witness set is not empty. So basically, what this rule here, together with this definition of the witness set, makes sure is that as long as the yellow edge is part of my auxiliary spanning tree S, of my witness tree S, the yellow path in my solution will stay there. And so because my spanning tree S on the right remains connected, it's always a spanning tree, I also know that my Steiner tree will continue connecting all the terminals, because for every edge in my witness tree, I will always maintain the corresponding path in my Steiner tree solution. So this is kind of the mechanism that's going on there with these witness trees, that I don't really know, it's hard to analyze when can I delete stuff from my Steiner tree and what's going on there. So then I will simply analyze, okay, I will delete stuff from my auxiliary spanning tree, and then I will use my spanning tree as a rule to kind of know which edges I still have to keep in my Steiner tree and which edges I can delete. I mean, I might be a bit pessimistic in which edges I maintain, but that's fine. Okay, it's like, I'm not quite sure if I got the questions of what are like the kind of properties one is using here? So I mean, here the witness tree is actually something that's happening completely in the analysis. I mean, also because this witness tree is really just like, I mean, we're defining these witness trees starting from an optimal solution, which we don't know. There's actually this local search algorithm that I will mention at the end. There we are actually computing a witness tree building a witness tree for a solution that we actually have at hand. So there we can actually build it explicitly. But yeah, in general, it's mostly an analysis tool because it's really just something that for spanning trees, we have this nice structure. We can kind of nicely analyze like which things we can delete cheaply because there is this whole spanning trees form the basis of a matroid, and then there's this whole matroid theory and all the tools we can use. And then for Steiner tree, none of this works. So then we kind of built this auxiliary thing and then kind of use it to interfer things for the Steiner trees. That's mainly the thing why we're using this. Okay. Any other questions at this point? Okay. Then, yeah, if not, then let me just state, I mean, there are a few things that we introduced here. There's this witness tree, there's this auxiliary cost function, which I haven't really shown you how to define them exactly. There are different possibilities. What I will do is I will show you what are kind of the key properties that we want from these objects, and then I can show you how we can put all these things together to get the analysis of the overall algorithm. And get this LN4 approximation algorithm. Okay. So what we'll need is the key properties of S, that's our witness tree, C bar, that's our auxiliary cost function, and there will also be a potential, which I haven't yet mentioned, a potential function pi of F, that will be basically our progress measure in the algorithm. So we'll have some value pi of F for a Steiner tree F, which is giving us some kind of progress measure in our algorithm. And the key properties that we need in the analysis, and all these things are constructed just to ensure these key properties, is first of all that this auxiliary cost function, if I sum it up, if I look at the total auxiliary cost of my witness tree, then this is nothing but the cost of my Steiner tree solution. So in some sense, what this auxiliary cost function is doing, it's just distributing the cost of my Steiner tree in some way to the edges of the spanning tree. This is the one thing is actually, yeah, this is not complicated. The other thing that we want is whenever we drop a set of edges from my auxiliary spanning tree S, then I want that my potential decreases by at least the cost, the auxiliary cost of the edges I dropped. And this is basically something, yeah, you construct the potential function in such a way that you will have the property that whenever I drop or remove a set of edges from my auxiliary spanning tree S, then the potential will decrease at least by this cost of whatever I dropped. This is, yeah, in the end, you just define the potential in order to have this property. And then there is one last thing about the potential. The potential will have the property that the potential of our optimum k-restricted Steiner tree is at most LN4 times the cost of my k-restricted Steiner tree. And this is kind of where this LN4 is coming in. So in some sense, you try to construct all of this in such a way that you get in a small factor here as possible. And LN4 is the best we know what to do. And then there is one other property, which is not so surprising, but the potential of the empty set should be zero. Good. I think now, yeah, we more or less have all the ingredients together so that I can write you down basically what's the remainder of the analysis. How can we put all these things together, the bridge lemma, this concept of the witnessed sets, and then these key properties that we have here. If we plug them together, the analysis is now fairly short. So let's go through this. So what we'll do is we'll consider the analysis of one fixed iteration of the algorithm for now. So we have our algorithm, which iterates these, just samples one random component with probabilities proportional to our LP variables, and then picks this component. And so what we do is we let M just be the suitable normalization constant of our probability distribution. So M is such that the pair T, T is sampled with probability X, T, T divided by M. So it's just the normalization of our probability distribution. Everyone was sampled with probability proportional to the corresponding X variables, and M is just whatever we need to normalize this to get the correct probability. Now we want to look at what is the expected cost of the component that we sample in our algorithm. So what is this? So this is 1 over M, and then I'm summing over all pairs, all my components, cost of T times X T T. So the thing here, this is the expected cost of our sampled components. So this is what we're interested in, because in the end we just iterative sample these components, and the cost of what we of our Steiner tree in the end is just the sum over all these expected costs. So that's what we want to upper bound. And I claim that this is at most 1 over m times the cost of f. And so f was this tree here, this which was initially the optimum k-restricted Steiner tree, but from which we deleted some solutions, some edges over time, if the witness set becomes empty. And the reason is that f, remember that f remains a feasible solution. And f is always a k-restricted Steiner tree, and then we deleted some edges. So f will at any point in the algorithm, or will always be some k-restricted Steiner tree for our current instance. In particular, f corresponds to a feasible solution to our hypergraphic LP. So this means that the objective value of the hypergraphic LP, and this is just the objective value of the hypergraphic LP up to this normalization factor fm, this is upper bounded by the cost of f, because the hypergraphic LP can only be cheaper than, this is kind of choosing the cheapest solution, cheapest fractional solution, and f is some solution to this. So this can only be cheaper. So this is because f is a feasible k-restricted Steiner tree solution. Now we are going to use this thing over here. We know that the cost of f is nothing but the c bar cost of f. This was one of the key properties here. So the c bar cost of s, we're just distributing the cost of f in a different way to the edges of our spanning tree. So this is 1 over m times the c bar cost of s. Okay. And now what we are doing in the last step is we are applying the bridge lemma, which I unfortunately had to erase, but if we, this was giving us some upper bound on the C bar cost of S. Let me just write this down. What the bridge lemma was saying is that if I sum over all my components, I weight everything with the X variables, and I'm looking at the C bar cost of the drop of my YT, then this is low bound. So the bridge lemma was saying if I look at the average, basically, cost of my drops, then this is at least the drop of my spanning tree, my auxiliary spanning tree here in this case. So now this auxiliary spanning tree, now we have our spanning tree to which we can apply the bridge lemma, for which we understand how we can analyze the drop of stuff. Okay. Good. So now question is, what is the thing here that we have on the right? Well, basically here we just have the probability that we sampled this component T, T, and then we have the C bar cost of the drop. So this is what we have here, is the expected C bar cost of the edges we drop. And the edges, the C bar cost of the edges we drop is a lower bound for our potential decrease. So what this is, this thing here is at most the expected decrease of our potential. Where we were using here this property here. So this is the analysis of one iteration, and what the key thing is, so what have we shown here? The expected cost of the component we sample is always at most the expected decrease of our potential function. And so having this, the analysis of the whole thing is now, the algorithm is now fairly simple. Then we will just see what happens at the start of the algorithm. What is our potential doing? We have the potential of F. At the beginning, F is op k. Notice initially F is op k. The potential of this is at most ln 4 times the cost of op k. This was here, this property of our potential. This is at most ln 4 times 1 plus epsilon times the cost of actually opt. We are not k restricted anymore. So that's the potential at the beginning. It's essentially ln 4 times the cost of opt, up to this 1 plus epsilon factor. And at the end of the algorithm, the potential of F, at the end of the algorithm, everything will be contracted. So F will just be the empty set. And so then the potential is zero. Okay, so the potential can decrease at most by this amount in total. Like at beginning, it's no more than ln 4 times 1 plus epsilon times the cost of opt. And at the end, it's zero. So it can drop by at most this amount. And this means, because the expected cost of this component we sample is always at most the expected potential decrease, that kind of, if our potential can decrease by at most this amount, then we can only pay for our components at most this amount. So this means that the overall expected cost cost because of our analysis for a simple for a single iteration is at most L on 4 times 1 plus epsilon times the cost of opt. And this basically then gives you the approximation factor. So this is how you can get this ln 4 plus epsilon approximation factor. This does not tell you anything about the integrality gap of the of this hypergraphic LP. We were still here just comparing to the cost of opt. Let me at the end say a few words about this local search approach that I mentioned at the beginning. So what the algorithm that we found together with Ricoeur's inclusion is doing, which achieves the same approximation factor. This is basically a local search algorithm, which is always maintaining a Steiner tree F. And in the local search, we are not just trying to minimize the cost of our tree directly, but we are always trying to minimize basically the potential of F. So we're using the same potential function, which yeah, wasn't explicitly at least present in the original analysis of Birka et al. But so we are doing a local search algorithm. Throughout this local search algorithm, we will always maintain our Steiner tree and the corresponding witness tree and have all these potential functions. But then we are kind of trying to minimize the value of this potential function. And what we are showing, what one can show in the analysis, and which then also gives a simple proof, or relatively simple proof, at least simpler proof as the one existing before for the integrality gap of the hypergraphic LP, is what we show that these local minimizers of the potential pi of f, they have cost at most logarithm of 4 times the value of this hypergraphic LP, basically. So basically, and then, yeah, our algorithm will find an approximate local minimizer of this, which then also gives us an ln4 approximation, but it even also shows that the solution that we find is at most ln4 times 1 plus epsilon factor away from the value of this hypergraphic relaxation there. So in some sense, the techniques or what's happening in the analysis is kind of uses all the same concepts and is using similar things in here, but the algorithm is different. You don't have to even, I mean, you don't even have to use the linear program, this hypergraphic LP at all in the algorithm. You can just use it in the analysis. You can also compare her directly to opt if you want. Both works, depending on whether you use the decomposition theorem or the bridge lemma. You either get here the value of the hypergraphic relaxation or just opt k. Both works. But the algorithm now is a purely combinatorial one. It's just a local search algorithm in some sense, although a kind of special local search algorithm, because we are not just trying to minimize the cost of the solution, but we are trying to minimize this different objective function. So it's kind of a non-oblivious local search, which is trying to minimize this potential function and then using the same tools in the analysis, but somehow in a different way, applying this potential now to our current solution F in the local search instead of to our optimum solution as we did in the previous analysis. One can basically also use all these tools to analyze this local search algorithm. So it's, if you look at the algorithms, they look very different. If you look at the analysis, like the tools behind them are very similar and closely related. And they're basically the same ingredients, but put together in a different way. So you get a very different kind of algorithm. Here, a purely combinatorial one, and the other one is this linear programming-based algorithm. Good. Okay. So I think this is all I wanted to say about these approximation algorithms for Steiner tree. This ln4 plus epsilon is the best approximation factor we know so far. Hartnett's results mentioned earlier are still quite far away, so it's open whether we can do better than this ln4 plus epsilon, but at least, yeah, in the last 15 years, we haven't seen any improvements on the approximation factor here, but that would be very exciting. So then, yeah, we just one last comment. So the last lecture of this series will be next Monday, same time, same building, I think a different room. The last lecture will not be on the Steiner tree problem anymore, so we'll start with look at a different topic, at the Steiner forest problem, where we've recently seen the first better than two approximation algorithms for this. So I will talk about the main ideas behind this result. So we'll start with a fresh topic there, but still stay in this area of network design. Yeah, so that's it from my side for today. So happy to answer any further questions if there are any. And yeah, thank you.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.